Hi, it's Rob Granter here from softtissuetherapyonline.com and the Australasian College of Soft Tissue Therapy. Welcome to all those that are listening today. We can confirm that we are sponsoring the wonderful clinician Mark Finch to teach three courses in Melbourne in October of this year. And any practitioner wanting to rapidly advance their knowledge in all aspects of assessment and treatment of the fascial system will love these courses. Mark brings the latest in fascial research with the skilled hands and astute assessment skills of a highly experienced clinician. So I thought, with that in mind, that it would be a brilliant time to catch up with Mark today and discuss the content of these classes and the wider topic of improving our clinical success and assisting our patients and clients to return to ideal function. So good morning, Mark.
Good morning, or good afternoon it is here.
All the way from Vancouver, so it's a nice early morning here and a nice late night for you over in Vancouver.
Exactly.
So by way of a quick introduction, Mark's been in practice for 19 years, having originally trained in New Zealand. He moved to North America to study structural integration with Tom Myers, as well as that, he's extensively studied in visceral manipulation and has most recently completed the year-long Integrated Systems Model Clinical Mentorship with the world-renowned physiotherapist Diane Lee. Mark conducts courses throughout North America, Australia and New Zealand, and this will be the fifth time that we've sponsored Mark to teach in Australia, and each time the feedback we get from our participants is absolutely glowing in terms of course content and Mark's teaching style. Lots of 10 out of 10s from our very, very happy participants. So I've had the great fortune to be involved in Mark's classes, seeing him teach his unique blend of myofascial treatment with assessment of motor control pre and post treatment to clearly demonstrate the rapid impact that well-planned and executed treatment can have on restoring function. Mark's a fantastic teacher with a wealth of knowledge, especially in the field of fascial function and dysfunction. So, Mark, just to kick things off, can we ask you to describe perhaps your clinical approach to the assessment and treatment of dysfunction of the body?
Well, first off, thanks for having me, Rob. Well, my clinical approach has evolved through the years, I'd probably best describe it at the moment in terms of a hypothesis-based approach. I've been, you know, really influenced by Diane Lee's work in terms of the integrated systems model. So I would definitely describe it as treating the whole person in terms of both their experience and their whole body, and then going through the process of building a clinical hypothesis through careful and accurate assessment, and then treating them both from a local dysfunction approach and from a global dysfunction approach, and then seeing how that hypothesis plays out and how well I can help people change their experience.
Sounds great. Sounds good. And having seen your work, that it's a perfect plan in terms of having that hypothesis and testing the hypotheses by reassessment to see if the outcomes that you're wanting to achieve have been achieved.
Yeah, I think that's I think that's more than a fascial approach. That's probably just good clinical treatment, regardless of what the intervention is. Yeah, I think the fascial system is definitely a large piece of the puzzle. It's a piece of the puzzle that's getting a lot of press at the moment for the last number of years, and kind of is becoming pretty popular in terms of an approach. It still remains one piece of the clinical puzzle, and I think it's important not to lose sight of all of the other pieces of the person's experience, as well as being very specific and precise with the fascial system in terms of having effective techniques.
Absolutely. Just on that then too, Mark, with the fourth International Fascial Research Congress being held in the USA in September of this year, 2015, Are you pleased that the current research focus in relation to the fascial tissue is helping to improve our success in achieving better clinical outcomes?
I'm not really sure, to be honest. The volume of research is just overwhelming. It just keeps growing by the month in terms of when you put the word fascia into PubMed, you get, you know, almost 20,000 hits. So, and it's all, you know, in terms of the Congress, I think it's from when they started in 2007, it's just been such a runaway success, partly because there was such a gap in the understanding of that tissue. The focus of the research still seems to be mostly on, you know, in the field of histology, so understanding the behavior of the tissue rather than getting to the macro level of understanding how that tissue is influencing the person's experience. So I still think that it's difficult for clinicians, first off, to make sense of all the research, because some of it seems to be contradictory. There's problems with terminology and and people have been on my courses before, I encourage people to think about these three S's of strain, sliding, and sensory input as a way to organize all of that massive body of information. And the challenge for the clinician is to try and find a way to integrate all of that, you know, amazing, interesting research into helping the patient that's standing in front of them. And the challenge that we have in the clinic is that we don't have long, you know, so in terms of those of us who've got an hour of treatment, we're still 15 or 20 minutes into a session. We kind of need to be knowing which direction we're heading in. So you've only got those first, you know, 5 or 10 minutes to really decide where the most important place to start is, what kind of an approach you're going to take with that person, and what's the thing that you can do to best help them. And sometimes all of this new research leaves people a little bit overwhelmed. So, it's obviously an amazing field and an amazingly interesting conference with all of this amazing research. Is it changing the way that clinicians treat the body? I'm not sure yet is the answer. I think there's still a big gap between people who've got these fascial techniques that they've been teaching for years and this research that's coming out, and the big gap, I think, for lots of clinicians is the clinical reasoning part of there's this really interesting research, and then there's this technique or that technique or any other different technique. And the part is knowing maybe where to start rather than what to do, where to start, and how am I going to know that I've helped that person, as opposed to which specific techniques am I going to which brand of techniques am I going to apply to their tissue. So yeah, that's a little bit of a long-winded answer to you.
that's a good answer. Can I ask you perhaps, how is your practice evolved over the last few years? And perhaps I know you're now teaching in Diane Lee's certification program, so how has that collaboration changed your practice?
I think it's changed it quite a lot, actually. I mean, I've been following Diane for, you know, taking her courses for the last 15 years, so it's been a nice progression for me to see how her work has evolved as well over the years. I would say the main thing that I've taken from taking Diane's integrated systems model clinical mentorship and now teaching in the myofascial piece of her puzzle, as she calls it, is really about honing the clinical reasoning skills and getting good at cutting to the chase. So building a hypothesis about how what the next steps are for that patient to change their experience, to change their function, to improve their performance, whatever it is that they're coming in with. I think that the structural integration training that I took with Tom Myers all those years ago really gave me a good understanding of how to think globally and how to assess globally and treat globally. And that really is where the structural integration paradigm shines. The visceral and neuromeningeal manipulation classes that I've been taking over these are the ones that have really kind of honed the palpation skills in terms of being accurate in terms of knowing which structures I'm on and what I'm trying to affect. And then, as I said, Diane's approach, the reason I really like it is that it's not so technique based. It's more a way of thinking about treatment. So it's a model that that many different tools can go into. So many different clinicians can use to apply in their practice. And it's more about understanding where to treat, how to know that you're having the desired effect, how to know that the patient's going in the right direction, and then using the tools that you've got in your toolbox to help make those changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's brilliant. Of course, you'll bring that understanding front and center in relation to your courses that you'll be presenting with us here.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I really... It's always the top of my list in terms of the thing or the things that I would like students to get from the courses is how to know that you're going in the right direction with your treatment. And you know, it's always the first couple of questions that I ask people when they come into my clinic. You know, what can I do for you, and how are you going to know you're getting better? And that's often a difficult question for patients. And it's also a question that I think clinicians sort of should be behooved to ask themselves in terms of how are you going to know that your patient's getting better? And hopefully it's something that's not just their painful experience. That's usually a nice side effect. And obviously it's the one that we're all after. But it's good to have some other indicators of you know, how you know they're going in the right direction.
Mm. And what sort of indicators are you looking for when you're talking about that experience? What things?
Well, those would come from the task that you've identified as being meaningful to that person. So, for example, In the pelvis class, we'll take some simple tasks of stand to sit, so essentially a squat or getting down into a sitting position or getting up out of a sitting position, and that's a really functional, common, or it's something that we all do every day. Then taking a simple task like bending forward, and then what you're assessing is the alignment, the biomechanics, and the control of that movement. Or from a tissue point of view, the adaptability of the tissues to allow that movement with optimal alignment and good awareness in terms of the smoothness of the movement and as you said, the motor control. Mm. So from there, you look for places that's not happening optimally, and then break that down into a simple objective finding or a comparative sign, you might say. And then use palpation skills to assess the tissues around that area and determine which area is the best place to start in. And then go into your specific treatments. So that's for me, that's where the fascial part comes in, and that's, you know, I'm often thinking a lot about fascia in terms of my treatment and my approach to people, and how can I most effectively change the fascial system. And it is possible, regardless of what you hear about people saying that you can't change or can't release the fascial system. That's another conversation. And then rechecking that your hypothesis was correct in terms of did that treatment that you used for the area that you'd identified, did it change that functional task? So has the squat improved? Has the alignment, the biomechanics, or the control improved in terms of that simple task of bending forward or doing a squat stand to sit or sit to stand.
Yeah, and those simple tasks can be quite profound too. It's certainly something that I've taken on board since you brought that to my attention many years ago. But such a simple task can reveal so much to you as a clinician as well. If a person goes from ideal alignment in a standing position and then sitting, that there's a clear torsion developed in the whole pelvic girdle. It's little surprise that those people could be in discomfort when they're sitting with such unequal forces spread across their body from one movement to another.
Yeah, and that's a great example, Rob, in terms of picking that up as a clinician. Really, I think, puts you ahead in terms of building a hypothesis, because you're asking yourself what could be all the things that are allowing or helping the pelvis to twist, and then testing it in terms of, once you've done your treatment, is it now, you know, improved?
Yes.
And if it hasn't, then you just go to the next piece of the puzzle in terms of, you know, maybe it's not release that person needs, maybe it's more motor control, maybe you haven't quite got to the piece that needs releasing. And it really working in that way, I think, really is, it's initially a bit more scary for people, because it requires, it's some people don't take it on so easy because it requires more thinking initially. But ultimately, it's actually easier because you don't have to know the answers. You just have to know what the questions are. You know, so you don't have to be, you don't have to know everything. You just have to be able to constantly test your hypothesis. And if you get to a point where, you know, you've got a finding that's not changing, then it's easy to refer that person to someone who you think might be able to help them. And it's easier to know whether it's likely that you're helping them, because there's good research to show that you know, when motor control or biomechanics improves, often pain is behind that improvement. So it can take another month or 6 weeks for the pain to dampen down after the alignment or the biomechanics or the controls improved. So that's the question of how are you going to know as a clinician that your patient's heading in the right direction?
Yes, and it seems such a fundamental ideal place to start in terms of proving the efficiency and quality of movement. Certainly, it's just such an ideal place to begin any intervention at all, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's as I was saying before, it's the one of the first questions that I'd ask a new patient is, what can't you do that you want to be able to do? And most patients will come in talking about their painful experience and wanting their pain to go away. But really what people want is to improve their function to improve their function in a way that is not painful. But most people, for whatever reason, will just focus on the pain rather than the thing that they can't do. Like, what's the pain stopping you from doing? And that's the thing. For example, you know, my back hurts and I can't go out to dinner with my wife or my husband, or you know, I can't sit in my car and drive for an hour or whatever it is. So those things are easy to take. Okay, well, let's have a look at what happens when you sit.
Yes.
Rather than just going straight to treatment of the painful site. And once you've then narrowed down that task or that position that's meaningful for the patient, then you can layer on the impact of the fascial system on top of that. So knowing the anatomy of the fascial system and where it should be sliding and where it should be transferring strain and how it might be pulling the pelvis into that malalignment or making the spine or the thorax twist as the person bends forward, or restricting the head from rotation as they're trying to drive out the driveway in their car in the morning, things like that. Then I think treatment gets more effective for yep. clinicians.
Yep. And more exciting too, to see those
yeah.
those big changes occurring. Yeah. Mark, is there any particular publications or researchers that we should be watching in terms of their current or past published work, just to give us a bit more information and background of the good people that you you see in the world of effective clinical assessment and treatment?
Yeah, Diane Lee, obviously, but Carla Stecco is sitting on my desk at the moment, actually, this book right here. That's the book that I've been most interested in lately. I mean, I think that the interesting there, I mean, there are a lot of books coming out about fascia at the moment, and a number of them are a compilation of various different authors, and they're always interesting to read in terms of this person's approach or that person's approach. But I think a big missing piece is still a clear understanding of the gross anatomy of the fascial system through the whole body, because it's surprising that it's still not that accurate in terms of what we know about how the fascia is arranged and how it should move and slide or not slide. It's the anatomy world has been so focused on muscle tissue for so long, and fascia is a little bit harder to map, I think, in terms of the anatomy, just because it degrades so fast in terms of embalmed cadavers. The embalmed fascia is so different from the real live tissue. That and also some of these structures are pretty thin, and thin doesn't necessarily mean weak. So fascial structures that are a millimeter or less in thickness can be massively strong and have massive effects on function. So yeah, Carla Stecco's book is the one that's got my interest at the moment, just because it's a big leap forward in terms of understanding functional fascial anatomy.
So beautifully photographed as well. It's just so meticulously set to demonstrate what she wants to demonstrate.
Yeah, and she's been doing it for a really long time. She's got such a lot of experience in terms of dissections and a long family history of fascial
treatment. Yes.
So yeah, she's definitely a potent resource in that regard.
Absolutely. What an incredible family that have brought us so much understanding of the fascia. I'm sure that Dad has been trying to get the world to come on board in relation to fascia for tens and tens of years, and he must be so proud to see his two children making such an impact in the world at the moment. So it's great. So Luigi, what a great person he was to begin that attempt to drive some understanding of the function of the world of fascia.
Oh, absolutely, and it's so nice to see his children. I mean, he's obviously a brilliant and gifted clinician. It's lovely to see his kids going on a journey to try and explain what their dad was doing all those years, basically. They're doing it they're doing it in spades. They're both Antonio and Carla are both very well respected clinicians and scientists in their own right.
Yes, brilliant. So, Mark, no doubt you'll expand on a lot of these wonderful things when you're out here in Australia. So, as we said earlier, Mark will be teaching here in Melbourne in early October of 2015. So, Mark will be conducting a two-day course focusing on the spine, a two-day course focusing on the pelvic girdle, and one-day course as well, with a clinical reasoning approach as well. So, Mark, can you give us an idea of what people can expect on those courses, and specifically how it might change their practice?
Yeah. So the things that I always like for students to take away from those courses are these. So first off, some understanding of the current state of fascial research and a way to try and organize all of that research in their minds. So that's the three S's that you've heard before, Rob: the sliding, the strain, and the sensory. All got kind of lots of research in each of those categories, but it gives you a simple way of thinking about how you can sort of do a complete set of techniques in terms of having a little bit of each one of those in your treatment, and which areas are primarily should be sliding and which areas primarily should be transferring strain. Taking, as we were talking about before, taking some simple movements that are meaningful to the patient and breaking them down into an assessment. For example, the stand to sit that we were talking about before, learning to differentiate: is this a problem with a torsion in the pelvis, or is this a problem with control of the hip joint? So differentiating between the hip and the pelvis. For the spine, bending forward, rotating the thorax, rotating the head, and learning to create a hypothesis of where that restriction might be coming from in terms of prioritizing areas of treatment. For example, head and neck rotation restrictions are often helped by working on the thorax and freeing up the biomechanics and alignment and control of the thorax, and same goes for the pelvis and the hip. So that's the assessment part, and then getting the kinesthetic experience and the feel in your hands or in the student's hands in terms of knowing how to be precise about which layer you're contacting and the amount of tension required and how to really effectively interact with the patient's body in a mechanical way.
That's certainly a highlight of your the way you conduct your courses too, I think, Mark, too. I mean, every participant will go away knowing that they've had a very, very close association with you. You will have personally mentored them, if you like, to really perfect those that feel, that engagement of tissue that you really want those students. So this is not one of those classes where we're going to have 150 people. It's going to be very, very much in the way of ensuring that each participant does get that good, personal mentorship from you. So we can expect to have lots of happy participants from that perspective as well.
Yeah, and I think all the great clinicians that ever met, the thing that they have in common is that when they do their treatment, they're precise about whatever it is that they're doing, whether they're doing soft tissue work, whether they're working in the cranium, whether they're manipulating a joint, whether they're teaching exercise. It's the precision. So I think that's a really important piece to get in terms of the kinesthetic experience. And then developing treatment strategies. So helping people, think about where the next places to go in terms of treatment are, and how they can help their patients change their movement patterns and overall change their experience.
Mm-hmm. And that that one day that you set aside too on the on the Monday, for those that have done completed on this trip the pelvic girdle course on any previous trips that you've done to Australia. So anyone that's done the 2-day pelvic course with you is able to do that 1-day clinical reasoning course. So can you just give us a little bit of an idea of what you would like to participants to take away from that particular course?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to that 1 day. I'm looking forward to all of the days, but that one especially. So after people have been through the pelvis course, so we're all on the same page in terms of assessing the alignment of the pelvis, the hip, and that sort of thing, then taking the reasoning down into the rest of the leg, the lower leg and the foot. So for example, if a patient comes into your office with knee pain, learning to figure out, should I start in the foot, should I start in the hip, should I start in the pelvis, or should I start at the area of pain in the knee? So that's going to be a little bit of a short amount of assessment and technique in terms of the lower leg and the foot, but it's mostly going to be clinical reasoning in terms of you've got these skills in terms of the pelvis. Now let's take it all the way down to the foot and really make it an integrated treatment from the foot all the way up to the pelvis, because as you know, the driver of the dysfunction can be coming from anywhere in the body. So you know, having all of these great assessment and treatment skills in the pelvis is excellent, except if the problem's in the foot. and then it can get frustrating. So that's really what I want to add for people is you know, taking it all the way down and giving them, you know, even more skills in terms of being able to rule the foot in or out, or the knee or the hip, as I was saying.
Well, that's fantastic, Mark. So I'm sure those that are listening have gained a lot of insight into the way that you go about your clinical practice. And if they're anything like me, they're even more excited at the fact that you'll be coming back to Australia in October of this year and would like to take part in these courses. So if anyone would like to get more information about the courses that are happening here in Melbourne in October of 2015, they could certainly email me at rlgranter@me.com, and we'll certainly put those people on the mailing list for any future advances in when we release the registration details. So, Mark, I'd just like to thank you so much for making time to speak to us today, and we look forward to seeing you so much back here in Melbourne in October of this year.
Oh, likewise, Rob. It's great to come and see you, but it's also I always really like the courses. You know, they're always good groups of people. They're a nice size. People are enthusiastic. So and you know, the clinicians, the pool of clinicians that you bring to courses are always of a great quality. You know, taught in many places around the world, and they're always top notch. So that's a reflection on you and the people that you're getting along. And so I always love coming down to Australia, and I'm looking forward to it this year.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Mark. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Likewise.
Bye.
See ya.